Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hello and welcome to White Wine Question Time, something from the cellar. Another mini episode of our brand new drop that sees us revisit some of the fantastic guests we've had on the show over the last 4 years. And having chatted the hind legs off of more than 200 guests, let me tell you, our cellar is heaving with vintage conversations. So every Tuesday, we'll be dropping a bite-sized episode that uncorks some of our very best bits from our very best guests. And this week, we're revisiting some fierce female company we've kept to shine a light on some of the incredible women we've managed to share wine, wisdom, and conversation with. And I'm kicking off with Skin, the lead singer of Skunk and Nancy. He's not only rock royalty, but also a genuine bona fide trailblazer for women in music. As an artist who's redefined preconceptions around sexuality, race, and gender, all the whilst smashing out hit records as she sold them around the world. Now, when she came on the show, we tripped through the pages of the book she'd just written, her autobiography called It Takes Blood and Guts. And in it, she documents some major moments from her extraordinary life and career and took the opportunity to correct some narratives, like the fact, for example, that she, and not Beyoncé, was the first woman ever to headline Glastonbury. Well, as I'm reading your book, and literally I've been that crazy lady I've got it on my Kindle and I've got the hard copy, and I've been on trains, I've been on buses, I've been on tubes reading it. I walk into walls because I can't stop reading when I get off at my stop. It takes you there, and what a bloody story.
But you know, when it was first mentioned to me, and I've written it with my great friend Lucy O'Brien, when it was first mentioned to me, my reaction was kind of like, I haven't done anything. I've just been in a band and tour. I mean, I haven't done anything. And I basically blanked her for like 3 months. I was like, I'm not answering her. She's going to want me to write a book. And then the more I thought about it, and then there were all these books coming out about Britpop, 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 Britpop. And I was like, do you know, there's something else to say about what was going on in the 90s. It wasn't just Britpop. Britpop was massive, massive. But there were so many other things going on at the same time. You know, there was Bjork, there was Goldie, there was R&B black girl groups, there was drum and bass, there was trip hop. And I felt a bit like, you know, I think this is a good time to tell an alternate story. It's a good time to kind of like say what was happening from someone who probably at the time, well, definitely at the time, wasn't really included in it and felt very outside of it, and felt that that was quite a deliberate move. So I thought, well, let's tell like an alternate story and just put the book in context of what was happening in London around the time, because that was very important to me, because I had a few publishing offers, and one of them, which was one of the big ones, was like, yeah, we just want to do it from your perspective only. And I was like, no, it has to be it has to be for mine and someone else's so we can place it in time and history. So then it has context, and context is vital. So that was one of the things that we wanted to really kind of push in the book. Like, you know, there are other stories, and those stories are just as vital as the Britpop story. Not that I hate Britpop. I love Britpop. You know?
But you're quite right, because what I get from reading the book, I've always considered you, by the way, to be a vital part of that scene. So the fact that you felt airbrushed is really upsetting, because for me, this story is told through the eyes of somebody that had a ringside seat across that musical kind of movement and that time. But also, you're quite right. Your book, every step of the way, every page you turn, there is another chapter of social history that has not been reported. And we're seeing this now with so much, you know, we're talking to you in the month of Black history. I mean, why it has to be a month and it shouldn't go across the year still makes me scratch my head. But the fact is, so much goes unreported, and we're learning more and more now. And this is very much your story. And I know that you felt that at times, because you didn't fit what the establishment wanted the scene to look like at that time, well, they just kind of not erased you, just opted to not include you. And that's so wrong, because you were breaking records, making records, and changing rules every time you went out and you raised your voice, and you continue to do that. And I applaud you and thank you for that.
Well, you know, I think that there was this very strong sense of, at the time, of like, I would be in situations all the time where I knew that people didn't get me and people didn't understand me. And so I think that from the other side of it, if I was empathetic to how they were seeing me, I think that's quite, especially big male egos, that's quite a valuable thing to do. You've got something in front of you that you don't understand and you have the power. So it's actually easier to ignore it and to pretend it doesn't exist, because then you lose that feeling of uncomfortability and vulnerability, and you have all the power and you feel good again. And I think that that's what happened a lot. People kind of like, you know, it's kind of like, they sold millions of records, but I just don't like her voice, because they couldn't say we weren't good. They couldn't say we weren't popular. They couldn't say we didn't write great songs. So they just kind of didn't write about us because they didn't know how to write about us. And I definitely feel that uncomfortability just kept coming back and coming back. I've been doing a lot of interviews for this book, and yesterday someone said to me, you know, well, you were a bit weird and you were aggressive and you were a bit like this and that. And I was like, no, I wasn't. That's just how you felt, because you didn't know anybody like me and I wasn't represented and you didn't know what to do with me. So you kind of just jumped into the same cliches that other people jump into. About, you know, they'll see Black youth on the street, they think that person's going to be dangerous or whatever. But that's not about them, it's about you projecting what you feel about it. So I think that there was a lot of that. And as a consequence, the amount of people that didn't even know we headlined Glastonbury. I did Lovely Fern Cotton, and I was reading I did her Happy Place podcast, and I love that one. She's amazing. And some of the comments were like, oh, I thought she wasn't doing music anymore. And that's what happens if you're not talked about. People just think you've just stopped or you're not doing anything. Well, you step outside of the UK and we play up to 20,000 people a night. You know, because we're still massive in other countries. But in England, it's like, it's Janet Jackson. It's like, what have you done for me lately? So, I mean, again, you know, the Prodigy, Maxim, Leroy. An amazing, massive, massive group. But nobody really talks about the fact that they were the first two Black people to headline Glastonbury. I was the first woman. So I can pat that. But, and it's kind of like, then there was nobody really till Stormzy. That's a 20-year gap. You know,
There was. I mean, there was Beyonce, and it was like, oh, first Black woman to headline Glastonbury, and that would have been you.
Yeah, we're talking about British people. Yeah, but yeah, no, and I was at when Storm when Beyonce said that, because I'm like, well, everybody must know that she was interviewed by the same people that interviewed me when I walked off stage in 1999, and I think it's more about the fact that. You know, as we're not seen as headliners, you know, all across Europe, that it was the same. Skunk Anansie were the first band, Prodigy were the first band, you know, and those we were the the rare occasions when Black British music was headlining massive festivals all across Europe. But being Black wasn't really an issue. It wasn't something that I talked about. It was kind of like, oh yeah, that feels uncomfortable. Let's not talk about that. And I would say it's only literally been this year that I can sit here in a mainstream interview and talk about being Black and talk about Black issues and talk about Glastonbury and talk about that because of the remit and the voice that has come out of Black Lives Matter. And I think that's a really good thing, you know, and I'm happy about it. I think, you know, we're getting there in the end to most people and with some other people, you know, I feel there's a definite rise in the right wing around the world. But yeah. I think that's what makes our music amazing is the diversity of it.
Skin, still walking a path very much of her own. And since we recorded that episode, Skin and her wife, Lady Fag, have become parents to a beautiful little girl called Lev. Congratulations. And talk of kids takes me to my next guest on this tapas board of fantastic women featured in this episode. Next up, I'm refreshing my glass with one of my favourite all-time broadcasters, Sheila Fogarty. Our conversation on this episode went far and wide. Sheila opened up about caring for her mother during COVID and the pandemic, her incredible reporting on the Hillsborough disaster and subsequent fight for many years to keep the voices of the victims and family members heard as they fought for justice. But the clip that I wanted to share with you today is one that really made me smile. As a woman, it can often be hard to escape the pressure of having children. And women who choose not to become parents can find themselves bombarded sometimes with insensitive, irritating, clumsy, and, well, sometimes offensive questions. But Sheila has found the perfect response. When else great difficulties have turned into great treasures for you?
Gosh, that's a tough one. Just because there's so... You know, there's so many examples in life, aren't there, where you just think, right, how am I going to manage this? How am I going to handle this? But something that turned out to be a gift, well, actually that, you know, what I've just described with Mum, without a doubt, has taught me a huge amount. I never had a burning desire to have children. I never had a burning desire not to have children. You know, I'm quite...
Ambivalent?
I didn't even have ambivalence about it.
Indifference?
Yeah, kind of. It's not even, I love kids and I've got loads of nieces and nephews and a couple of godchildren, a few godchildren, and I adore them, you know, I'd do anything for them. It was just, I think I'm just a bit of a sort of, oh, that next and that next and that's interesting and that's interesting. The idea of settling down and having a family, it was no driver. It was not a driver of mine.
Too much of a butterfly.
In my 20s, a bit, yeah, I think so. And it's never really stopped. So I never felt the clock ticking. I never thought, God, am I doing this right? Or, you know, I'm just naturally interested in being alive and living. So if it involves children, great. If it involves husbands, great. Well, not two, obviously. Well, not at the same time anyway. You know, if it involves those things, fine. And if it doesn't, also fine.
Yeah.
Live, just live.
Yeah.
And so that's been that was always my approach to kids. It wasn't even an approach to kids. It's an approach to life in which that was inevitably. But it's an interesting one because there are so many ways in which life tells you you should do X, Y, or Z. It's not just about motherhood and it's not even just for women either. It's for men. I just think if we could all just take a breath and say, what am I interested in? What do I want to do?
Well, what actually drives me. Prescribed for you by society as opposed to what makes your heart beat, right?
Yeah. And also, if you fall in love and your heart beats and you want to have a baby with somebody,
great.
And had that happened, I'd have gone for it like a shot. But it just wasn't that order for me, you know what I mean? So it's never bothered me. But what did bother me was by the time I was about, I don't know, late 30s, maybe mid 30s, lots of people, almost exclusively women and some friends as well, would really quiz me on it. And it really fucked me off when they did that. And I'd be like, I'm sorry, when I walk through a door, do you just see the absence of a baby or do you see me? You know, what is it you're seeing when I walk through the door here, you know? And for a brief period, it really got on my nerves. And I'd go to I went to a christening once and I was holding a baby at a christening, not unknown, a friend's baby while they were having the pictures taken. And a woman came up to me. She, you know, we were just chatting, mingling, perfectly nice woman. And she asked a perfectly normal question. She said, oh, is this your little girl? And I said, no, oh no, I wish. I was being nice about little Bella and da, 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 da. And she said to me, well, do you have children? Also a normal question. I don't, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a normal question. And I said, no, I don't actually. And she went, your life must be terrible.
Pity. Did she cock her head to one side?
Screw the nose
thing.
Up. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and a screwy nose.
I spoke to Jane Fallon about this, you know, the author Jane Fallon. I was interviewing her once and we were talking about this issue. And I said, the woman at the christening said to me, oh, so it went from a nice normal conversation to, oh dear, is your life shit? And and I just said, actually, I couldn't stand it anymore. I'd had like 6 months of this nonsense. So I just said, God love this woman. She didn't mean any harm. But I just said, I did have two actually. And then she went, oh. And you could see this horror in her face, like, oh my God, what happened to the die? What happened to the kids? And I said, reaching for my wine, I said, social services took them off me. And then, and that began a short, thankfully short, psychotic period of doing my level best to make people who ask me those questions as uncomfortable as possible. And when I told Jane Fallon this, she was like, oh, I'm including that in the book. I said, feel free. Feel free.
Have it.
Get the message out there. Leave us fuck alone. I think it's good that women can now say they don't want the men. That was never
That's
my
okay.
thing. Mine was just like, I'm going to live and see where it takes me. That's my approach to these things. And a bit of a hippie on the quiet, I suppose.
Are people that insensitive still that they come in and they crash in with those sort of questions, Sheila?
They've stopped now because they've decided my ovaries are a non-starter. But I think you ask most 35-plus-year-old women who don't have kids how often people ask them about it. I'll bet it's loads still.
Yeah.
But that phase of life added to the time I had with my mum, you know, this very meaningful time I had with my mum. I did have, and I'm hoping to write about it. I'm not ready to, when I say I'm not ready, I mean, I haven't quite formulated it properly in my mind because it's in my heart still rather than in my mind. I did have a real sort of, like a sort of resolution in my mind about how all of that connects, all of that question of what we do with our life, whether we for women, whether we become a mother or not, what it is to be a mother. And my mother was some mother and had seven kids, as we've said a few times. She was an extraordinary mother. You know, she really was, but in a very light touch way. And because of the generation she was from in Ireland, the country she was from, the generation she was from, you got married. If you were fertile enough to have kids, you had lots of kids. That was just, that was the deal, you know. And I was in one of my brother's wedding speeches once, they were reading the litany of, you know, mum and dad came here in 1950, there's six kids. So Sheila was born in 1966. And then they got a telly as though that was the conversation. You know? But she, I was just thinking towards the end of her life, you know, she took everything. She had much fewer choices than you or I would have had in our life. And she took everything as it came and in her stride. And, you know, and that was child after child after child after child for 7 years. And dad, you know, he had to keep those kids alive as well, you know.
Yeah, and fed.
And clothed. Fed and clothed and all the rest of it. I mean, it really, she really is of that Irish Catholic tradition. And I think that much time spent with her in these last few years, and also, I suppose, my own maturity as well, has just taught me that there are, for all the noise in this world at the moment, and there's a lot of it, I'm making quite a bit of it myself, you know, that actually we've got to find space in between all that noise to ponder these things in our heart and to just really work out what you want to say and why, you know.
But I said right at the beginning of this show, I think you're one of our most considered broadcasters because that is how I hear you, Sheila.
Is it?
I don't think
that's my mum coming through there.
And I think that's exactly it, right? Is that you probably think you say a lot, but I think actually you may well say a lot, but what you say is very considered. And
it rubbed off in the end.
Yeah, inadvertently.
It's
there. So very, very much your mother's daughter.
In
that respect.
And my dad's in that.
Yeah.
Gabbing away. As my dad used to say on my headstone, it would say, too busy talking.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Okay, the final something from the cellar in this mini drop comes from Fee Glover and Jane Garvey. Broadcasting legends, their podcast fortunately racked up more than 30 million downloads as they chewed the fat on the issues and minutiae of the day and tackled huge issues, all the while working for BBC Radio 4, where Jane for many years was at the helm of Women's Hour. Here they revisit their shock decision to quit the BBC and their podcast, fortunately, having been seduced to jump ship to pastures new. They talk about navigating live radio whilst wading through menopausal brain fog and some of the challenges they faced in the line of duty at the top of their game as both journalists and parents, and their efforts to lend a voice to the gender pay gap at the BBC. So talk me through how a resignation like this plays out, because this is huge, right? You are like a sparkling jewel in the crown of the BBC. 30 million downloads. I don't know many BBC podcasts that can even say that they've come close to that.
I don't think they can, but it's interesting. I wouldn't say we did feel entirely celebrated by the BBC, which isn't to say that we're not grateful to them for any number of opportunities that we have had over the years. But, I mean, it is only an employer at the end of the day, like sure. All the other employers. And we do feel that maybe they could have gone a bit further with us. What would you say about that? Just been a bit more loving and attentive.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I think if we surprised ourselves in the success of Fortunately, which we are enormously grateful for, I think we surprised the BBC in the success of Fortunately. And I don't think it would be speaking out of line to say that maybe they simply didn't know what to do with two middle-aged women who've, both done quite a few things at the BBC already. And Times Radio came along. I love Times Radio and I've listened to it. It's hooked me in. I'm really properly addicted to it now.
They have some great broadcasters there. Yes. Gable's great, Mariella Frostrup.
John Pienaar, Carol Walker, Aisha Hazarika. You know, it's a really,
so
really...
So
Matt Chorley.
Yeah, Matt Chorley, God, yes. He's good. So they're doing something that I think Jane and I are just very familiar with. It's news, but it makes you laugh. It doesn't take itself too seriously, but you also know that you're not going to miss anything big. So I think it was a very, very attractive...
Does it feel like Radio 4 with a sense of humour?
Kind of. It makes me think of the glory years of Five Live.
Yeah.
When we first started there, really. Maybe I'm just being nostalgic, but when we're not kidding ourselves, we're not in our 30s anymore. So we do look at life in a different way, and life comes at you in a different way when you get to our stage of life. But I'm really looking forward to doing the thing that is counterintuitive in some ways, because podcasts are massive, and I love podcasts. For me, my big love was always live radio and the appeal of being able to go back to that with the real risk involved because, you know, you can massively make a tit of yourself.
I don't think you realise that until you step away from live radio. Then you go, And we were just talking, like, you know, before we came on air, yeah. And I said, ladies, how do you feel sometimes when you have this? I mean, I get the fear now with menopause fog that I can literally forget what I'm saying whilst I'm saying it.
Yes.
And that must be terrifying in a life.
Well, there are two of us, so one of us will make up for the other ones.
and actually, that is a massive, massive appeal of doing it, because if I'm going to be brutally honest, I would feel exactly as you do, a little bit exposed doing a programme on my own at the moment, because
those things
do happen. But Jane and I, you know, back each other up whilst also burying the hatchet in each other's backs. We've got the scars to prove
occasionally.
But we are there for each other. And do you know what? Times Radio has already been so enthusiastic about what we'd like to do in the programme. There's an enormous feeling of support. And I defy any woman of our age not to have recognised the value of support. I don't think you do when you're very young. You've got this huge...
You've got that self-belief, haven't
self-belief,
you?
This barrel of ambition to tap into. But so an employer who comes along and says, do things your way, we'll try and make it happen, and if it doesn't work, we'll change direction. But also, yes, we are happy for you both, you know, to ramble on a bit in conversation, see where it goes and stuff. It's a really lovely thing. It's a really, really lovely thing. So
it's a bit like like a sort of professional Shirley Valentine scenario, isn't it? Somebody's come along and turned your head on holiday. You've
very
got a bit of a
so.
Tan and everything looks a bit fabulous.
A slightly older gent in a Jag has turned up outside my house.
And if we could just get a giant pepper pot on the table, we're there in the trattoria at the end of the rocks.
And I will
throwing
have a
garlic your rusty
bread.
Lanyard out of the window as you go.
Yes.
That's spot on. You've got it.
So tell me, how does it feel when you're chatted up to make a move like this? Did you see it coming? And did it turn your head a la Shirley Valentine?
Jane and I have both taken in the past jobs that have suited our domestic limitations.
Yeah, you've both made career choices based on the realities and practicalities of life as a parent.
Yes.
As have I, actually.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm coming into my second spring now.
But isn't that lovely? And actually, I would always have wanted, when I was a younger mum, to have been able to see more women in front of me who had been able to do that juggle. I hate it, actually, when people call it a juggle, because a juggle implies that you catch the balls, and I've spent most of the last 17 years dropping them. But it would have been lovely to see that women can get back into the game if you take quite a bit of, not necessarily time out. I mean, I've always worked, you've always worked, but we haven't, well, you more so than me, but I haven't been at the front line of broadcasting since my kids were tiny. So to be given an opportunity to go back in at a really lovely level, I really want to do justice to that, actually. I think because that needs
so
to
important.
Change.
You're so
it
right.
It really needs to
because
change.
Because I actually have, though, I did exactly the same. I dialed it right back. All of my yeses and nos were made around what worked for me as a parent, as a single parent as well. And now I am dialing it back up again. And I do think it's really important for people to see that it is possible. It's not the end. And we need some reassurance that you can do that.
Yep. And also, I think we need reassurance, not just for us, you know, in order to fulfill our own ambitions, feel valued in the workplace, pay the bills, which is an enormous part of why anybody's going to work in the first place. You know, it's not some kind of vanity project. And I think often women can have that thrown at them. But it's about looking after a family, isn't it? It really is about children.
Yeah.
And
but
you know,
it feels really unfeminist to say that, though, doesn't it? But I wanted to be present in my son's life.
Not unfeminist.
We both get that completely.
Yeah.
And I don't regret the time I made myself available to my kids.
No, me neither.
I'm glad I did.
And I encourage anybody that feels that they want to do the same to do the same. And if you don't, no problem.
That's
I get that too.
None of our business, yeah.
But it does feel slightly a slightly outdated view, doesn't it?
That well, gosh, it shouldn't, should it? I mean, I know myself as well that I was a better parent precisely because I did do some work.
Yeah, exactly.
I was much more patient. I was much more able to play in the pop-up post office on the days I wasn't working because I knew that the next day I would be working. When I was at Woman's Hour, I only ever worked a three-day week. Yeah. And it could mean, honestly, I mean, I had days where I would interview the Prime Minister in the morning, okay, only two or three of those days, and then be at pick-up at 3:30.
Yeah.
And, you know, the kid comes out of school, they're sweating, or they've, you know, somebody in the class has wet their pants, and they had chips for lunch, and they got two wrong in their spelling test, and you're suddenly back in their world, And that is all that matters. And what the hell you've done at work during that morning, no one gives a toss, to be perfectly honest.
Well, no, and that's,
and it's
that's
brilliant.
Probably as it should be.
Absolutely as it should be. Yeah, yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me and uncorking some brilliant conversations for this episode of Something from the Cellar. There'll be another one dropping next Tuesday. So if you don't already follow or subscribe to the show, make sure you do to ensure it gets delivered directly to your feed and you don't miss a minute. I'll be back on Friday with a brand new guest and a brand new episode. In the meantime, if you want to enjoy these guests and their episodes in full, put their names into the search bar or scroll through our back catalogue. This week you had Skin, Sheila Fogarty, and Fee Glover and Jane Garvey. Thanks so much for your company.
White Wine Question Time is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.